Mandrake.
Yes, dear?
Have you ever seen a commie drink a glass of water?
Well, yeah, I can't say I have, Jack.
Vodka. That's what they drink, isn't it? Never water.
Well, I believe that's what they drink, Jack, yes.
On no account will a commie ever drink water, and not without good reason.
Oh, yes. I, can't quite see what you're getting at, Jack.
Water. That's what I'm getting at, water. Mandrake, water is the source of all life. 7/10 of this earth's surface is water. Why do you realize that 70% of you is water?
Oh, God.
And as human beings, you and I need fresh, pure water to replenish our precious bodily fluids.
Yes.
Are you beginning to understand?
Yes.
Mandrake. Mandrake, have you never wondered why I drink only distilled water or rainwater and only pure grain alcohol?
Well, it did occur to me, Jack, yes.
Have you ever heard of a thing called fluoridation? Fluoridation of water?
Yes, I have heard of that, Jack, yes. Yes.
Well, do you know what it is?
No. No, I don't know what it is now.
Do you realize that fluoridation is the most monstrously conceived and dangerous communist plot we have ever had to face?
Mandrake, come over here. The redcoats are coming. Come on.
Welcome back, everybody. We're talking with Paul Conant about fluoride. His book is called The Case Against Fluoride. We talked a little bit about Chris Bryson, the interview, and of course his book, The Fluoride Deception, as well. And the website where you can read more about all of these things is fluoridealert.org. And in this segment, I want to talk more about water and filtration options, alternatives, and other kind of solutions to many of these problems, of course. But before we go there, I wanted to ask you about the, I guess, where the green movement is in all this. You mentioned previously here at the end of the first that there are some environmentalists that have signed up on this. They understand the problem with this. But it seems to me that a lot of the chemicals that affect human beings the most are not really looked upon that strongly in these days. Why is that? And what is the case here with fluoridation? Or is the green movement going after it? Maybe I've missed that, Paul.
Well, it's a good question. We've had very strong support in our efforts from the environmental working group, which is very sensitive to toxics in products and so on. And they've been very helpful. But I explained at the beginning 17 years ago, I was reluctant to get into this because I didn't want to be stigmatized as Looney Tunes, which is what they've done. There's an air of intimidation out there which affects a lot of people. Now, many of the major environmental groups like you would think would jump into this, like Clean Water Action, have been intimidated by their membership, some of which are dentists, and they are fairly wealthy. They contribute a lot of money. But it's been very pervasive, this attitude that to be against fluoridation labels you as suspect. And environmental groups are in the business of raising money from a lot of people do not want to be labeled as suspects. So they've kept arm's length away from this. Back in the 1980s, when the EPA produced this absolutely terrible safe water drinking standard of fluoride at 4 parts per million, absolutely bogus science, clearly political, the National Resources Defense Council jumped in with a lawsuit. So they were very active back in the 1980s, less so today. And now I've worked on environmental issues. I've worked for 28 years now on waste management, and many of the people that I've worked with on waste on an individual level have been very supportive, like Lois Gibbs from the Citizens Group for Environmental Justice. Citizens for Health and Environmental Justice have been very supportive, and many other individuals around the country and around the world have been supportive. Unfortunately, where we could have had a lot more support is in Europe, because 97% of Europe has not fluoridated. But for them, it's such an old issue now. No one's talking about fluoridation in Europe. They just don't do it. The only places that do it, like Ireland has mandatory fluoridation. It's 73% of the population there is drinking fluoridated water. Because of American influence, by the way, 1963, since 1963, mandatory fluoridation, not a single health study has ever been conducted in Ireland to see what they're doing to the populace. It's a scandal. England has 10%, but it's been stationary at 10% for many, many years now. And some communities in Spain are fluoridated. The rest are non-fluoridated. And these decisions were made back in the 1970s. So this is not a controversial issue. It's not an issue in Europe. And therefore, many, many scientists and doctors who I think could have been very helpful in embarrassing the United States into that continues to push this process are not doing so, which is hurting us. The media is very superficial on this. I thank you very much for doing this program, because we very seldom get a chance to look at this in depth.
It's incredible. So why is that? It's incredible. I mean, I have to agree with you. I mean, I don't know how many Hollywood movies I've seen now that constantly is being brought up that if you're against fluoridation, you're some kind of, you know, tinfoil wearing nutcase, and it's still there, you know, all the time. It's incredible.
Well, it's contrived. I mean, there's public relations outfits who are spinning this. The American Council on Science and Health, which is an industry front. All its money seems to come from industry, the oil lobby, the oil industry, the pharmaceutical industry, the food industry, the chemical industry, you name it. They've never found a chemical that they didn't like. They've spun this message very effectively. They've used several scientists, the most vitriolic in their attacks on fluoridation, people that are opposed to fluoridation, and they get these articles into the media and have their ways of intimidating people. But the mainstream media, well, first of all, because of the inroads of the internet, investigative journalism is dwindling to a precious few now. And so what we get are very superficial newspaper stories. They're a quote from both sides, so they're honoring the mandates from their professional training. They get quotes from both sides. But those quotes are so limited that it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. For example, if you say, well, the Center for Disease Control says that fluoridation is one of the top 10 public health achievements of the 20th century, but Mrs. Clutterbuck down the street thinks it's a bad idea because it gives her periwinkles or whatever, it's pretty obvious which side the innocent reader of that newspaper is going to believe. So although they've gone through the motions of airing both sides, they really haven't. They produce this self-fulfilling prophecy. And whilst we're at it, let's say when people hear the word Center for Disease Control and Prevention, to give its full name, CDC, they think of this 20,000 people, this federal agency headquartered in Atlanta with lots and lots of scientists and toxicologists and medical specialists working away to protect our health. And that's great, except the only division of the CDC that says anything about fluoridation is the oral health division. And now we're down to 30 people, and most of those are dentists or dentally trained. Mm-hmm. And their job is to promote fluoridation. So, again, it's very, very deceptive. People hear the word Center of Disease Control, think it's the whole thing has been vetted by all these scientists, when it hasn't. And I think that probably there are many scientists at the CDC who are acutely embarrassed that they have this oral health division going out and pushing this poison on the public.
Yeah.
Acutely embarrassed.
Yeah. Well, it's the old, fallacy of appeal to authority. This is all what it is. It doesn't matter what the science is saying at the end of it. And this is how I understood that it was also you know, suggested in the beginning that it was all about the men in the white coats that are suggested that this is what should be done to you know, to change something or to affect it. But I wanted to ask you one thing again, and I apologize if you need to repeat something that you mentioned before, Paul. But can you clarify again how these lobby groups and the industry overall benefits then financially from adding fluoride to the water supply?
Well, personally, I think it's more of a prestige thing for the health, the public health point of view. Prestige, wanting to hold on to their credibility, the public's trust. That's, I think, the public health lobby's interest in all this. As far as the dental community is concerned, enormous amount of money goes into dental research, is going into fluoridation. So that's the gravy train as far as dental research is concerned, as long as you maintain the mantra that fluoridation is safe and effective, safe and effective, safe and effective. You have other economic interests who really want fluoridation to continue, or rather don't want fluoridation to don't want it to be established that fluoridation poses any harm. That if harm is established at 1 milligram per liter in the drinking water, then they're going to be confronted with lawsuits from their workers and possibly from local farmers exposed to much higher levels of fluoride than that. And some of the ailments that they got could be very, very expensive lawsuits. So they've got that interest. You've got the sugar lobby that's always wanted to find a way to reduce tooth decay without reducing sugar consumption. They want to keep the kids eating the candies and the cookies and the Coca-Cola and everything else that contains bucket loads of sugar. So they're economic, and of course you've got the phosphate fertilizer industry, which is very happy to get rid of its hazardous waste via our drinking water rather than pay to have it dispensed in a hazardous waste facility or disposed of there, or to process it and make it into a chemical feedstock for other industries.
Very good. So drinking it is one thing, and there are ways around that if the finances are there to make it possible. We're talking about things like bottled water, and hopefully that's you know, BPA free and free from other phthalates and all that. There's another issue, but then we have you know, spring water. You can filter and things, and I want to get into that and ask you about that as well. But also one thing people don't think about, and what your comment on that is, of course, showering, bathing, and things like that. We absorb a lot of water through the skin as well. Correct, Paul?
Yeah. Well, the science of that is not strong. I mean, my gut feeling is yes, we're going to absorb, especially lying in a hot bath. I'm sure with our pores are opening, and the fluoride then has a way of getting through the skin that it wouldn't normally have. And I've met people that come out in big red blotches when they have a shower in fluoridated water as opposed to non-fluoridated water. So we've got some human guinea pigs out there that are learning the hard way.
Wow.
That you can absorb it through the skin.
I've seen that myself, by the way, so I know it's happening.
And of course we're getting fluoride from, you have the multiplier effect as well, that once you put fluoride in the water, then the beverages and processed foods made in fluoridated communities are then going to be consumed in addition to the fluoridated water. You're going to get the fluoride in the soft drinks, in the beer, in the fruit juice reconstituted with water and so on. So we get this multiplier effect once it goes into the water. But as far as protecting yourself is concerned, it's very frustrating. You know, when it took us 7.5 years for my wife and I to get it out of our little village of Canton, New York. And during that time, we would get bottled water from the big store, you know, the big 5-gallon blue jugs, and we'd have a water tower, and we use that for cooking and drinking.
Yeah.
But as you've pointed out, we were getting fluoride in every shower, every bath. My wife was forced to use this water on her organic garden, which she was horrified
to
do. And then, even though when you protect yourself at home, when you go to work, every cup of coffee, every glass of water I drank at work was fluoridated. When you go to the restaurant, every glass of water on the food and everything else contains fluoride. When you go to a friend's house, unless they've done the same, you're going to get fluoride there. So my advice is expend as much political energy as you can to get it out of your community. We're getting tremendously positive results now of communities getting fluoride out. Since 2008, I think we've got 116 communities, over 3 million people have stopped fluoridation. It may be more than that. So what did you do,
Paul? If it, let us in on this a little bit. Where does one begin if the concern is here now to do something about this? Where would you suggest?
Well, I would go slowly. If you bring it up too quickly at your council, the council will raise the issue. You'll have a public meeting. And what you will find is a posse of dentists and local pediatricians who bought into this will come and swamp you out and will intimidate the council makers, councillors. They will say, you know, we're your doctors, we're your dentists, you trust us, we're your professionals. How dare you? This is the best thing you've ever done. How dare you threaten your children in this way? This would be the worst thing to do. So after they've spoken like this for an hour and a half, they all have the same mantra, safe and effective, safe and effective, safe and effective. The councillors will back off. This happens again and again. Even when communities take water, fluoride out of the water, a few months later, some of them restart again because of the pressure that the dental groups are able to mobilize to make them look crazy people.
Yeah.
So don't go too quickly. Get a group together. You can't win it alone. Get a few like-minded people. And this is where I think the 28-minute videotape is very effective. You show that at coffee meetings on a Saturday morning. Get as many friends as possible. Make lots of copy. Get them to show it to their friends, their neighbors. See if you can get professors at the local university. Be humble. Go to them and say, look, I'm not a professor. I'm not a professional. You're a dentist. You're a doctor. You're a scientist. Would you look at this videotape? I've watched it. I'm very concerned. I would like to get fluoride out of the water, but I'm not a professional. You are. Would you look at this videotape? And if I come back in a week's time, would you tell me, should I be concerned or not concerned? I think that's a good approach.
Not going on like an attack dog and saying, do this, do that.
Go on like an attack dog. They just roll their eyes,
treat you
like the idiot that they believe you are already. The moment you talk about fluoridation, their eyes will begin to roll. So be prepared for that. And if you can get a few dentists and doctors and professors, then you will offset the avalanche of the other side when it appears. Now, another thing to do is this. You have our book. You know, I'm getting it for the library. I'm not trying to sell things. I don't make any money out of this.
Well, this is a very important subject, and this is the research that you guys have done, and this is how, you know, you're doing it, and it helps to support your work as well. So why not get the book? Of course, it's very important. This is one of the most important subjects there. Go ahead, Paul.
Well, it's just that I get really irritated when some of these blogs. I hate blogs, by the way. You get such vicious, nasty people troll those things. They're only too ready to just spit out their bile, their vile. And one of the things they say, I say, well, you know, I'd be glad to argue with you after you've read the book, but don't try to trump the book by a movie that was made in 1964 called Dr. Strangelove. Don't tell me that you know enough from that movie to characterize me and all the information in my book. Read the book first. Go, oh, you're just trying to sell your book. Oh, that's all you're trying to do. You make money. You're just doing it. You know, give me a break. So I say, get it from the library. Order it from your library. But that's your thing. When someone, after you've started the discussion with people and they try to treat you like lunatics, you say, wait a moment. Have you read this book? Well, you know, well, why not read this? And then we can discuss it. And if they are still obstreperous, what you can do, and I'd really advise this strongly, is you say to them, look, you seem to know a lot about this issue and you're very confident in it. Can you, or can you find someone to debate Professor Conant or any of the other two authors? Can you find someone to debate this issue in public with him? Because I am assured that if I can get a debate, he will come to this town and debate you. So are you prepared to do that? You know, and then they usually back off. And I've used this. Right now, in 17 years, I think I've had 6 debates. They are told not to debate this issue. I'll give you a little story here.
Mm-hmm,
it's interesting. Back in 2003, I got a phone call from the EPA. They were having their annual science fair in Washington, D.C., and each science fair they have one debate. And they wanted me to debate the fluoridation issue. I said, fine, I'll be happy to do that. They spent the next 5 weeks trying to find somebody to debate me, somebody from government, somebody from one of the professional bodies in the United States or Canada. They couldn't find one person that was prepared to debate me. Recently, so that's a little bit of history there.
Mm.
And I finally had to give a presentation at the EPA and not the debate, which is pretty sad when you think about it.
Well, that's amazing considering how many millions of people this is affecting, and no one can be there to back it up
It's amazing to me. If I try to get away with that, if I said, look, I hold this opinion very, very strongly, and then someone challenged me to debate it and defend it in public, and I said, no, I'm not going to, I'd be laughed out of court. That would be the end of it.
Mm.
But because they have, quote, the authority, which you alluded to before, you know, they are the government and so on, they can get away with this. Like recently, in Wichita, Kansas, there was a referendum. Fortunately, the people voted not to start fluoridation in Wichita. But at the time, the Pew Charitable Trust, which has got involved, I don't know why, it's embarrassing, and if anybody knows anybody in the Pew, for goodness sake, write to their board of directors and say, why the hell are you promoting fluoridation? This is ridiculous. But anyway, they are. They're promoting it. And they've hired none other than Dr. William Maas, M-A-A-S. Now, William Maas was the director of the Oral Health Division of the Center for Disease Control. So he was the number one man promoting fluoridation in the United States. The number one man promoting fluoridation in the United States. He's now retired, he's working for Pew, and he goes out to communities and tells them everything is hunky-dory. So he gave a presentation in Wichita, and afterwards, one of the citizens asked him, I was coming there in a couple of weeks, would he debate me? And he said, oh no. He said, Paul Connett is a brilliant debater, and I've only spoken 6 times in public on this issue. And then, now if he's left it there, okay, Bill, you're very modest, that's fine, and you know, that shouldn't be the end of it, but anyway, that's at least respectful. But then he went on to say, but Paul Connett is the leading misinformer on fluoridation in the United States. And that really teed me off. I mean, how dare he, on the one hand, refuse to debate, and on the other hand, attack and insult me as being the leading misinformer of fluoridation in the United States.
Yeah.
I mean, if I were, I don't know the English grammar here, if I was or were the leading misinformer of the United States, then I would be easy to debate, because all he would have to do in front of an intelligent audience is to go through all the misinformation I'm supposed to be peddling, point out that it's inaccurate or so on, and he'd win the debate. But he can't do that. The science is not on their side, and I'm afraid they're too gutless to admit that. They're too gutless to defend it in public. And as long as they can't defend it, that should be the end of fluoridation.
Yeah.
Period. If they can't defend it in public, and they can't, they have to use public relations outfits. They have to get fluoridation in by stealth. They, you know, look at the way they're trying to get it into Portland, Oregon. They can't stand these large cities that are not fluoridated. Portland, the citizens of Portland have voted 3 times not to fluoridate.
And they continue to say no, right? So
yeah, that's right. And now they're trying to get it in by stealth. So very quietly, they nobbled the media. They got the media on side. They got about 60 local groups, various minority social action groups and so on side. And then they followed the shock and awe campaign. And within a matter of weeks, when the people in Portland were still stunned by the news that they were even thinking about it, the councillors, 5 of them, the 5 commissioners, voted it in to Portland, Oregon. Fortunately, the citizens were so angered by this that they were able to get about 40,000 people signing a petition to get this referendum. So there's going to be a referendum in Portland in May. But the, you know, what I say is, if fluoridation was as good as they say it was, then they wouldn't need this stealth. They wouldn't need the intimidation and harassment of scientists and dentists who speak out against it. They would be willing to debate it in public. They would use every opportunity to debate it and crush the opponents. If it was as good as they said it was, the Food and Drug Administration would have regulated fluoride right now for ingestion, but they never have. For 68 years, the FDA has never regulated fluoride for ingestion, either as prescription pills or as in the water supply, even though it is now the most prescribed medication in U.S. history. Never regulated by the FDA, which means that they've never had the randomized clinical trials to demonstrate effectiveness or safety, and they're not collecting side effects of people drinking fluoridated water. The whole thing is just Kafka-esque.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's a toxic waste chemical, and this is what people have to understand. And the let's talk about some of the intermediate solutions. Let's say that there's obviously a big task, but as you said, you managed to pull it off of getting fluoridation out of the water supply in your town or city, and these are options that's definitely something that people should begin thinking about here. But in the meantime, then there are different options out there. There are filters. You mentioned reverse osmosis. There are some that use this kind of aluminum oxide element, I believe. There are bottled spring water. Everything else. What would you recommend people to do?
Well, the system I liked, I saw it operating in Australia, is mixed ion exchange, where you have a cation exchange resin, an anion exchange resin. You put in your water at the top, and only pure water comes out of the bottom, and it's very quick, and it doesn't leave a sludge, or at least you send back the resins to the manufacturer, and you know exactly when they've been used up, because the moment it stopped removing the ions, both positive and negative ions, all you're left with is water at the bottom, the conductivity will shoot up. The moment you get ions that are not removed, the conductivity of the water at the bottom will just shoot up. You know when you've got to send those resins back to the manufacturer and get new ones. I don't have any relationship with the manufacturers. I can't give you the name, but that's the principle. That's the one I like the best. You can also get steam distillation units, tabletop distillation units, to make enough distilled water for you to at least drink with each day.
Do you have, Paul, any brand names or anything like that people can search for if they want to look for these?
No. I don't get into that. The Fluoride Action Network does not endorse any products, and we have to leave people to find this out for themselves.
Okay. Do you know of anything that can be placed on the main water supply before it goes out into the rest of the house, so it can be, on showers and stuff like that?
There are whole house reverse osmosis units will do that, but it's horrendously expensive. I think for a whole house you're talking at least $4,000, so only wealthy people. Yeah. And again, whilst you're doing that, just think of the irony here. We're supposed to be doing it for poor people, and yet it's precisely the poor people that can't afford these kind of measures to protect their children. So if you're really concerned about poor kids, let's get it out of everyone's water supply. Let's get dentistry back into dental offices. Dentistry should not be in the public water supply. We should never have started this practice. This is the only time since fluoridation began in 1945, it's the only time we've used the public water supply to deliver medicine. And that's a real no-no. I think for fairly obvious reasons. If you put a medicine in the drinking water, you can control the concentration, but you can't control the dose. You can't control, because you can't control how much water people drink. And not being able to control the dose on a medicine, ask any pharmacist, it's a no-no.
Yeah.
And secondly, once you put in the water, you can't control who it goes to. It goes to everybody, including bottle-fed infants, including elderly people, including sick people, people with poor nutrition, people with poor kidney function. And again, there's no drug that can go to everybody. And thirdly, you're violating the individual's right to informed consent to medication. And those three things combined should never have allowed fluoridation to start. And since it started, there have been many occasions where it's obvious that this has to stop. And the most obvious was in 1999, when the CDC admitted it worked topically, not systemically. It works on the surface of the teeth. So if you want fluoride, brush it on and spit it out. In 2006, when the National Research Council produced this huge volume on the toxicology of fluoride, and it was very clear from that research that there's not an adequate margin of safety to protect people drinking fluoridated water from known health effects. I mean, there is no argument that fluoride damages health. Millions of people have had their health damaged by fluoride in India, China, parts of Africa with high natural levels of fluoride. That's another time then that it should have stopped when people saw that. Also, that National Research Council report indicated that there are subsets of the population that are exceeding the EPA's safe reference dose for fluoride drinking fluoridated water, and that includes bottle-fed infants. So again, in 2006, fluoridation should have stopped. And also, another time when it should have stopped was in 2009, when the famous Iowa study, which is costing the U.S. taxpayer millions of dollars, the Iowa study is following tooth decay in children over a lifetime. So they're up to, I think in 2009, they were up to 9-year-olds. Now they're up to 13-year-olds. But what they did in that study, which was very interesting, has never been done before, and that was to actually calculate how much fluoride each child in the study was getting of fluoride each day. How much from water, how much from food, how much from dental products like toothpaste and so on. Calculating the whole lot, the whole dose. And then they found at the end, what they were looking for was to determine the optimal dose, the so-called optimal dose needed to fight tooth decay. So they could tell people, you need 1 milligram a day, 2 milligrams a day, 3 milligrams a day, whatever, half a milligram a day. This is how much fluoride a kid needs to fight tooth decay. They couldn't do it. They could not find an optimal dose. They actually ended up by saying, there appears to be no relationship between the amount of fluoride swallowed and the level of tooth decay in these children. Hmm. And in fact, that is then the most scientific study that's been to date and could not establish that swallowing fluoride actually reduces tooth decay. But there's so little attention to honest science in this issue that this practice for some reason has to keep going regardless of the science, that this was largely ignored. But that is a fact, and people would see it in our book Warren. The study is by Warren et al. 2009, U.S. government funded study shows swallowing fluoride doesn't reduce tooth decay, or they couldn't establish the relationship.
Yeah.
And the reason is obvious. It works topically, and they've said so. It works topically.
Yeah.
And if it works topically, you don't have to put it in the drinking water. You don't have to force it on people that don't want it.
It's just, again, just reiterating that it's amazing that no extensive studies have been done on it. I mean, government, and then you have all these organizations are there to you know, quote unquote, protect us, right? Regulations and everything else. And yet on this thing, there's no extensive studies. Maybe you can let us know a little bit more, Paul, about how you kind of got this, how you pulled this off to get it off. I think a lot of people are interested in that, like how to organize and where you could turn first and things like this to something you recommend there.
Well, we had an interesting situation in Canton, New York. We had the local university where I taught, St. Lawrence University, and we had the brainwave of circulating not one petition but two petitions. And one petition says, we, the undersigned members of the St. Lawrence University community, professors, administrators, etc., do not want you to put fluoride in our drinking water. And the second petition said, we, the undersigned members of the St. Lawrence University community, do want you to put fluoride in our water. And at the end of the day, we had over 140 faculty and administrators saying we don't want it, and only one person, an electrician, who said that he did want it. So we took that 141 to the councillors, and the councillors now had a, you know, normally they deferred to the professions like dentists and maybe one or two pediatricians in the community said, you should have this, we say so, we're professionals. Now they had to balance that against teeing off a large segment of the academics working in their local university, and this time they sided with us. So I think it's worth working with your local universities to see if you can get the same kind of help from them that we got. But that
is the answer in the numbers, do you think, ultimately, of getting people overall involved from the city or town that you're from?
Yes. As I say, you know, we have to beat this one open mind and one community at a time. And finding the people with the open mind with credentials is not easy. But when you get them, they're very important. If you can get a dentist or a doctor or a scientist in your community that's strongly opposed to fluoridation and helps your campaign, you're in much better shape. And sometimes, you know, you have to make it a little simpler for people. A lot of people do not feel qualified scientifically. So if you get bogged down in the scientific details, which I'm afraid I've probably done today, you know, a lot of people back off and feel they're not qualified to do it. That's why I think you have to make certain things very obvious. For example, you've got two sides. Both sides strongly advocates one position. Both sides quotes a lot of science and a lot of papers and a lot of reviews and things. But only one side will defend it in public. And that should tell you a lot. And one side has a lot of money to spend on public relations. The other side hasn't. One side is earning a lot of money promoting this. One side is spending a lot of money trying to stop it. So I think there are a lot of things which make it fairly obvious which side is giving you the straight truth, at least as they see it. We all make mistakes, so just because you're honest does not mean that you don't make mistakes. So you have to take that into account as well. But one of the things I object in all this is that we all used to politicians spinning. But I'm not used to, I didn't expect civil servants to be spinning. I thought the role of a civil servant in a regulatory agency, a health agency, or environmental agency, was to provide decision makers with objective analysis, you know, to a balanced approach. You provide the best science that you can find to decision makers, so the decision makers have a good shot at making a good decision. And if any spin is going to enter into this, that's where it should enter, not before. But what I find around the world, and this is true in Canada, it's true in Ireland, it's true in Australia, it's true in New Zealand, where I've just come back from, it's true in the United States, that the civil servants are spinning this. And I'll give you two examples. In Queensland, Australia, Queensland Health put out, the Queensland had kept fluoridation out for over 50 years. Well, the rest of Australia was fluoridating. Queensland didn't, by and large. One town did, Townsville. And then in 2006, a newly appointed, she wasn't elected, Premier, Anna Bligh, came in, and the first thing she did was to introduce mandatory fluoridation for the whole state. And part of the process of doing this was running full-page ads from Queensland Health, which said, this glass of water can give you great teeth. And it argued that the studies done in Queensland showed there was a 65% difference in tooth decay between the children in Townsville, which was fluoridated, and Brisbane, which was non-fluoridated. But when you look for the 65% figure in the study, they had cherry-picked. They'd just taken it for one age range, 7-year-olds. And this difference of 65% amounted to 0.17 of one tooth surface out of about 100 tooth surfaces in the child's mouth. So 0.17 of a tooth surface. Can you imagine what those full-page ads from Queensland Health would have looked like, or the impact they would have had if they said, if we fluoridate Queensland, we'll reduce tooth decay by 0.17 of a tooth surface? And it was completely cherry-picked, because if they'd used the 9-year-old figures, it was a 20% reduction and a saving of 0.1 of a tooth surface. So completely cherry picked. And then in addition to that, they had pictures of teeth of a child from a fluoridated community, perfect teeth, they have beautiful mouth. Then they showed teeth of a child from a non-fluoridated community, and they'd ghastly teeth, I mean, chipped and broken and ugly as hell. And I said in my presentations in Queensland a few weeks ago, I said, you know, is this a saving of 0.17? Does that look the difference? They look like 0.17 of a tooth surface. So outrageous propaganda, not coming from politicians, but coming from Queensland Health. And then if you go to Canada, the chief dental officer of Canada, Dr. Peter Cooney, he said, and I was there at the meeting when he said it, in Dryden, Ontario, that was having a referendum on fluoridation. He said, I walked down your high street today, and I didn't see anybody growing horns, and you've been fluoridated for 40 years. And so that gives you some idea of the extent of Canada's research program on the health effects of fluoridation. They go around the country looking to see if anybody's growing horns, and as they haven't found any horns growing, moose horns, deer horns, bull horns, cow horns, what have you, then it's perfectly safe. And this same agency, Health Canada, appointed a six-man team to review the literature. Four of the six to review the literature on fluoridation safety and effectiveness, four of them were pro-fluoridation dentists.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Mm. Unbelievable. So the whole thing is rigged, and it's being rigged by civil servants for whatever reasons.
Yeah, I am more sinister than that, considering the intensive push and lobbying and whatever they can do, as you said before, like in Portland, referendum after referendum, and if that fails, they try another way. They're very, very determined here, and it's a constant fight, you know, in all these cities across America and in Ireland. And is there any other countries, as you said, that are doing it, you know, Asia or, you know, Africa?
Singapore,
or something like that?
Yeah. Singapore is mandatory because they have a pretty strong single-minded government in Singapore. Hong Kong is fluoridated. Not only part of China that's fluoridated. Malaysia is fluoridated. Other countries have, say, one or two towns fluoridated. Some countries in South America have fluoridation. Brazil has quite a high percentage. Argentina has a percentage. Chile has a percentage. But as I said, 97% of Europe does not fluoridate. And according to the World Health Organization, the tooth decay in 12-year-olds is as good, if not better, in the countries which are non-fluoridated as the countries which are fluoridated. That's tooth decay in 12-year-olds collected on a routine basis by the World Health Organization and published online. If you look at them, tooth decay rates are coming down as fast in the non-fluoridated as in the fluoridated countries, and today the tooth decay, you couldn't tell the difference whether that child had grown up in a fluoridated or non-fluoridated community, country.
Paul, can people invite you to do a talk in their town or city to you know, get the help, the wheels to start moving, to connect people and invite those that needs to hear some of this stuff?
Well, Barrett, yes. If they just remember the constraints on my time, if it's really important, and they certainly, you know, obviously we want to make sure we got a good audience for it. But my approach is I'll go anywhere to debate. So try to get someone to debate me. If you can't get someone to debate me after inviting all the pro-fluoridationists around, then you've probably scored a political victory there, and I might not even have to go. But I've often done that. The people have challenged people to debate. They can't get anybody to debate me, and then people come to hear the scientists that no pro-fluoridation person will debate. Occasionally we got a debate. We got one in Phoenix, Arizona last year with the dentist that had introduced, who had been the key person introducing fluoridation into Phoenix. That's available on videotape. I think if you look for Connett debate or Connett Phoenix debate, you can probably find it on the internet. But at least he had the guts to defend his position, which most of the dentists do not.
Well, exactly. That's a cowardly move, and you know, it's curious that they don't, and people should ask questions about that alone, you know. But by the way, another thing I was thinking about here, something I've heard for years, is that fluoride actually calcifies the pineal gland. Is this something you've heard about, Paul?
Well, I think it's the chicken. It's one of those chicken and the egg stories. Does fluoride calcify the pineal gland, or does the pineal gland calcify and then attract fluoride like a magnet? I think that's it. And I'm not quite sure when the pineal gland calcifies. But yes, Jennifer Luke in England got the pineal glands from 11 or 12 corpses and analyzed the fluoride in the calcified crystals and found very high levels of fluoride in these crystals. It averaged about 9,000 parts per million, went up to 21,000 parts per million in one case. And so, yes, this is pretty disturbing. And the question is why? You know, A, why does it calcify? B, why does... I think that's the key question, why it calcifies. Because once it calcifies, you know that fluoride is going to be attracted like a magnet, just as attracted to the bones and the teeth. It's going to be attracted to any tissue that calcifies. But what Jennifer Luke also showed was that animals which were exposed to fluoride had lowered melatonin production and reached puberty earlier than the low fluoride treated animals. Nobody in the fluoridating world has publicly, at least, attempted to reproduce her findings. I suspect that privately they have reproduced her findings, but because it conflicts with their desire to keep this practice going at all costs, have not published them. But it's very strange that something as simple to do as her experiments and so potentially important have not, that no fluoridated countries has attempted to reproduce it. It's extraordinary. Just one more extraordinary facet to this whole story.
Indeed. Well, we've covered a great deal. There's always more, of course, and we recommend our listeners to check out the research material on fluoridealert.org and the books. The full title of Paul's book is The Case Against Fluoride, How Hazardous Waste Ended Up in Our Drinking Water and the Bad Science and Powerful Politics That Keep It There. Then we have Chris Bryson's The Fluoride Deception as well. Anything you want to leave us now with, Paul, here in the last few minutes before we round things up for this time?
Well, again, I'd like to reiterate that there are many environmental and environmental health issues out there and grabbing for people's attention. But this is something that we're doing to ourselves, not by some industrial polluter. It's something we're doing to ourselves, and this means it's as easy to stop as turning off a spigot at the public waterworks. But to turn off that spigot, you need political will. And to get that political will, we need masses of people informed. I think your program will help that, and masses of people organized. And I don't do this very often, but I suspect that we've got some interested people there. I'd like to give you my email address. For those who want to have a serious conversation on this issue and may want to involve me in their campaigns, my email address is pconnett@gmail.com. That's P-C-O-N-N-E-T-T, no dots, P-C-O-N-N-E-T-T, @gmail.com. Let's see how together we can get fluoridation stopped worldwide. That's my dream. Before I pass away, I would like to see an end to this archaic practice that should never have started. And for scientists with an open mind, it's atrocious that it continues to this day.
Very good. That's a noble quest, Paul, and I wish you all the best of luck in the world, and I hope we can do something to contribute to some of the people out there who haven't heard about this before to understand what we're talking about and get the wheels turning here, of course. So thank you for your time today, Paul.
I always forget this. There is a petition, a worldwide petition out there, which needs many more signatures on it. It's Stop Water Fluoridation. And it's on the avaaz.org website, avaaz.org. I think there's about 30,000 signatures right now. It's worldwide, and it's lovely because once you put, you can watch the names coming in from all over the country. We have 7,000 on there right now, but we really need at least 70,000. We need to up it. So anybody listening, that's something very simple to do. Add your name, get your friends to do the same. That would be really great.
Very good. I found the link here, by the way, on the Avaaz website, and I'm going to link that up so people can, you know, just click through from our website and add their name onto that list. So thanks for that,
Fantastic.
Paul.
Fantastic.
All right.
Fantastic. Thank you very, very much.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Paul.
Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you learned something new. We have upcoming Ross Hamilton, Jim Vieira, and Hugh Newman for a roundtable on the very real and suppressed information about the ancient giants of the Americas. Also, Ulla Damegård on the assassination of Olof Palme, Part 3. More is coming after this. Thank you for listening. We appreciate your interest and for staying with us as a member. I'd like to extend my thanks to Fredrik, Lana, and Elizabeth for making Red Ice Creations what it is. I hope you have a good rest of your day or evening, and that you will listen again when we're back with more in just a few days. Stay informed and spread the word. Take good care.